You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Thanks again to Frank Wilczek, who was actually one of the first guests on the podcast back in March and May of 2012, when we were just starting out. You can download those interviews on the podcast page too.
Oh, we were so young and innocent back then, Brendan. So gullible that we were prepared to entertain the craziest thoughts. For instance, that neutrinos could travel faster than the speed of light. But Frank thankfully helped put us straight on that.
I'm so jaded about neutrinos now. Talk about failing to live up to the hype. I don't want to hear anything more about them ever again.
Okay then, Brendan. You might want to leave the room for this one. The next item is on neutrinos.
Oh no. What have neutrinos done now? Cured cancer? Solved world poverty? Killed Kennedy?
No, nothing quite that extreme. But they were in the news a couple of times in July, thanks to different experiments, both of which might relate to the question of why there's more matter in the universe than antimatter. I met up with particle physicist Ben Still at Queen Mary University of London to find out more about recent results from the T2K neutrino experiment he works on in Japan, and more news about neutrinos. So I'm here at Queen Mary University in London with particle physicist Ben Still. Now, Ben, you don't just work in London, you also work in Japan on the T2K experiment, which recently announced an exciting result about catching neutrinos as they kind of change personality. Can you tell us a bit more about what that experiment was looking for and what you found?
Certainly. So neutrinos are very ghostly things, but they do make up the few building blocks of nature from which everything is constructed. And neutrinos themselves are very interesting because of this ghostly nature. We're not quite sure what secrets they might hold. And so we're looking and experimenting with them to see if they can tell us more about the early universe. And in particular, we're looking to see if they can tell us about how all the matter came to exist over its antiversion antimatter. And so the T2K experiment is using a beam of neutrinos, specifically muon-type neutrinos. So there are three types, electron, muon, and tau. And the T2K experiment is using a muon beam of neutrinos and firing it 300 kilometers across Japan from the east coast to the west. Sounds a bit crazy, but we're doing this to try and see something that's called neutrino oscillations. Now, this is, as you mentioned, how neutrinos change their characteristic, and it's been seen to occur naturally in neutrinos coming from the atmosphere and neutrinos coming from the sun, and it's also been seen in man-made beams before. But we've only seen neutrinos disappearing into types of neutrino that we can't see, because tau-type neutrinos, for us to see them directly, require us to see the production of a tau particle, which is very, very heavy. And neutrinos in nature, certainly, and also with conventional beams, haven't got enough energy to create a tau particle. So when we have these beams, we see just neutrinos essentially disappearing into something else. And it's only through looking at statistics that we can tell that they're turning into other flavors of neutrino.
How surprising was it when people first kind of realized that neutrinos were able to do this, were kind of able to shift between, you know, these different flavors? Because, you know, it sort of sounds like if in those sort of observations they were seeing neutrinos just vanishing, did they immediately think they might be changing character into something else? Or, you know, was it just a big puzzle?
So it was a big puzzle at first. So it was first seen in the solar neutrino problem, where Ray Davis, a chemist by trade, started with a big tank of dry cleaning fluid because neutrinos interacting with the chlorine would produce radioactive argon, and that could be collected, and you could measure how many neutrinos are interacting in your big tank of dry cleaning fluid. And so he was looking for neutrinos coming from the sun specifically. And the amount of neutrinos he saw disagreed with John Bacall, a theorist, and his predictions of how many neutrinos should be coming from the fusion of elements together in the center of the sun. And so there was, for a while, this discrepancy between theory and experiment, each saying that the other might be wrong. And it wasn't until in 1998 that the Superkamikandi experiment, actually looking at neutrinos coming from the atmosphere, but along the same lines, was able to tell for the first time that exactly what was happening was neutrinos weren't, you know, disappearing entirely, but they were in fact changing into other flavors of neutrino.
And so as you were sort of explaining, the T2K experiment tried to look at this change more directly. Can you explain more about how they have done that?
So as I mentioned, all the experiments to date have essentially seen disappearance of neutrinos into some unknown composition of neutrino flavours. But for the first time, the T2K experiment has directly seen change from muon-type flavour to electron-type flavour. This is new because this is the first evidence, direct evidence of appearance.
And so what exactly are they seeing? Because you described how difficult it is to kind of see the neutrinos directly.
So it's all a game of odds and statistics. You have to sit there and be patient and look for these neutrinos because they interact, you know, maybe 1 in 100 billion times in our detector. And so we have the world's most intense beam of neutrinos. So we have the most intense beam, and we also have, as our far detector, the Super Kamio Kande detector, which is 50,000 tons of pure water sitting there to try and net just a few of these neutrinos. And that's exactly what it's done. It's netted just a few tens of these electron type neutrinos. But from measuring any type of background from other neutrino interactions that are happening, we can be confident enough to say that the tens of electron type candidate events that we've seen is in fact evidence of this change from muon to electron type.
So, you know, what does this tell us then about other mysteries in physics? Can neutrinos tell us something about, you know, the confusion about why there's more matter in the universe than antimatter, for instance?
This particular result from T2K is interesting because there is a slight tension between the T2K result and the results coming from reactor experiments.
What have the reactor results shown?
So reactor experiments are actually looking for the disappearance of anti-electron neutrinos, and they're looking for the disappearance over very short distances, distances to which you wouldn't ideally expect from just looking at solar neutrinos and atmospheric neutrinos, any of these anti-electron neutrinos to have disappeared. The only way they could have disappeared is if there is this very small subdominant change in characteristic. And they have indeed seen that there is a disappearance over short distances, and they've measured this characteristic quite accurately. And this tension could be one of three things. It could be that we have yet to understand accurately enough one of the other oscillations of the neutrino, the muon to tau type essentially, which is now the least accurately understood. It could be that T2K is sitting on a statistical blip. As I say, there's only a handful of tens of events. And so it could be that T2K is just on a statistical blip and we're therefore seeing more electron events than there actually is. Or the third and most interesting thing is that the tension could be the first sign that we're actually seeing a preference for matter over antimatter with the neutrinos and with the charged leptons. And that is exactly what we're looking for. And I think that with a longer running with T2K and more statistics, we're only going to get closer and closer to finding out if that is exactly what we're seeing.
Neutrinos have been in the news for other reasons in July, but actually in the other case that I'm referring to, because they haven't been doing anything very interesting at all, in fact. And this, I think, comes down to the question of matter and antimatter again, in terms of whether the neutrino might be its own antiparticle, as I think Italian physicist Ettore Majorana suggested in the 1930s. And this is something that an experiment in Italy has been looking into. Ben, can you tell us more about what they have found, or rather, what they haven't found?
So there are a number of experiments that are looking for something which we call neutrinoless double beta decay. And it's a type of radioactivity in which a neutron will turn into a proton and also spit out an electron and a neutrino at the same time. And a double beta decay is simply two of these happening simultaneously. So two neutrons turning into two protons, two electrons and two neutrinos. And neutrinoless is because, as Majorana postulated, the neutrino might be its own antiparticle. And if this is the case, then what would happen is the two neutrinos coming out from the simultaneous beta decays would be able to annihilate one another, because, you know, one would essentially be the antiparticle of the other, and so you wouldn't get any neutrinos coming out. And in this sense, you would always get the maximum energy given to the electrons in this decay. And so experiments are looking to see if they're seeing a lot of events where the electrons have maximum energy from these double beta decays.
And I guess the announcement that was made in July came out of the Gran Sasso experiment in Italy, and they haven't really seen any evidence of this annihilation at all. Is that bad news? Is that worrying news? Or, you know, how do you feel as a particle physicist who works on neutrinos? What were you expecting there?
So there has been previously a sensational claim by certain members of the Heidelberg-Moscow experiment who have claimed with over 5 standard deviation significance, which is kind of like benchmark in particle physics, that they actually saw double beta decay in the Heidelberg-Moscow experiment. But this has been very much treated with a little bit of skepticism by a lot of the other people, and certainly even within their own experiment. And so a lot of double beta decay experiments have been looking towards this kind of benchmark to try and see if they can prove or disprove this claim. And so far, every other experiment looking for neutrinoless double beta decay has drawn a blank. And the recent results have shown that there is a lot of tension between this Heidelberg-Moscow claim and current results as they stand. And so it's looking even less and less likely that this claim is going to kind of hold water.
And what's at stake if they aren't their own antiparticle? Does it matter in terms of other aspects of physics, or is it just sort of a curiosity that physicists, you know, would like to pin down?
There is some confusion in the community as to how the neutrino can have such a small mass. It can be so light. And so there have been ways in which you use Majorana neutrinos, which would be these heavy particle-antiparticle kind of objects, to kind of reduce the mass of the neutrinos that we see day to day. And so it might require a rethink in terms of that particular way of explaining the very light mass of neutrinos. There are many different theories to which light neutrino masses can be explained. It's just that the Majorana neutrino is probably the front runner at the moment and the most favourite amongst what we call model builders.
So it seems just to be something about neutrinos, I guess, that they're just controversial by nature.
They seem to sit on this interesting line. We understand something about them, but we don't understand everything about them. So really, it was that that drew me into it as an experimentalist, that there is something malleable to actually play with, but yet it could hold so many secrets and answers and exciting prospects for kind of new cutting-edge physics.
Thank you to Ben Still for chatting to Zia. On the podcast page, you can also download the October 2012 podcast, in which Still talks about the Jiggling Atoms physics and art project, which is the sort of thing he works on in his spare time. Keen-eared listeners may have heard police sirens blaring in the background there. Dare I ask why?
That's just what you hear when you go on location to the east end of London, Brendan, I'm afraid. But at FQXI, we'll dice with danger to bring you foundational physics news.